Welcome to Love at First Science, the podcast designed to dig deep into neuroscience, the human body, and anatomy. My name is Celeste. I'm a physio and I teach anatomy to yoga teachers. And this podcast is an archive of the lessons I've learned along the way in my attempt to bring a more science-based approach into the yoga world. Hey friends, thanks for tuning in. Just a quick reminder that I don't run any ads, so this podcast can only grow with your support. If you learned something new that you found useful, please do rate and review the podcast. And if you think the content can help someone get out of pain, improve their life, move without injuries, or even just feel more inspired, please share it with them. It would mean the absolute world to me, and you never know, we just might help elevate our community along the way. So there's clearly some sort of trend developing on the show where I have an obsession with neuroscientists because yet again, I'm going to be welcoming Svenja Borges, who's also a former neuroscientist. She did her PhD in proprioception, but since then has actually gone on to specialize in yoga and has written a book, unfortunately in German, which means a bunch of us are going to struggle to read it. I'm crossing all my fingers and toes that it gets translated, but basically it links up yoga and the brain and how different things work. So I'm very excited to bring her into the show today because I wanted to pick her brain more around the topic of proprioception. There's a lot of misunderstanding around this, and I feel like she's going to clarify so many different points for us. So without much further ado, let's welcome the incredible Svenja. This episode has been broken up into two parts, and this is part two. Yeah, proprioception lives in the brain.
Just to be precise, there's some processing in the spinal cord already. So for example, the reflexes we have, they're programmed in the spinal cord. And so it doesn't go to the brain. Like very simple reflexes, like the patella reflexes.
And like walking, right? Certain walking gait systems just go via the spinal cord, which again, guys, how fascinating is that? A bit like a chicken, you could just cut off the head and it'll keep going.
And I've heard it works with humans too. I don't want to imagine that, but...
How fascinating. Like we could geek out about cutting people's heads off, the two of us, because we're brain people. Only the two of us would get kick out of that. Okay, so let's give the listeners some practical tools. What can we do to improve our proprioception? Because it's obviously important. I mean, you spoke about the man who lost proprioception. He was debilitated. And I think that a lot of particularly hypermobile people, I was thinking about them when you were speaking about him, because I was like, we have such poor proprioception and we struggle to navigate life. And often as a result, performance is reduced, pain kind of comes into the mix. Yes, our other senses, you could say, are heightened as a result. But the tricky thing with, I suppose, hypermobility is that we struggle with our vision. We struggle with the vestibular system. So almost all the systems are slightly dulled. What can we do to improve the proprioceptive maps in our brain?
Yeah, that's a good question. And as you mentioned, this patient we talked about is a good hint on what we can do. So the brain, as I said, adapts to the demands that we give it. And so, it's our movement practice in various ways, like active motor coordination exercises, such as mobility work, are very helpful in not only the typical exercises, maybe, but how we move in our daily life. It makes sense to include head and eye movements, you know? So it's not only the limbs, but everything comes together. And it's good to change things up. So if we do like motor coordination exercises, we could just use weights or resistant bands and use that resistance to work against it, just to have to challenge us, because if we don't challenge our brain, it won't learn. Like it will think that everything is perfect the way it is. And so we need to give it a stimulus so that it will recognize it and think, okay, there's something not perfect. Like, you know, and so
I need to change.
So exactly, that it will be aware of that something needs to change. So it's definitely interesting that it's individual for every one of us. So it's good to just find our own edge and feel like find what is challenging to us, and then try to add on to that and control the movements in the best possible way. We could also change speed of movement or just orientation or whatever. So there are so many factors we can change, actually. And so active motor control is also benefiting proprioception a lot. So there was a study which I find really interesting is when active or passive movement is not giving us, like, we can't really, we don't learn really from passive movement. So we need this active motor control. So probably the motor command copy to then compare it with the feedback we get to being able to, for being able to learn. And also what's really important is without attention, there is no learning. So we, that's also why we need to challenge ourselves to, so that it remains interesting enough that we focus on it. And it's also important that it's not too hard so that it gets too frustrating, right? So we need to stay motivated.
Yeah. Yeah.
And so coming back to that patient we talked about, he used vision to enhance his, or just to substitute kind of his proprioception. But usually what's really helpful is to use multisensory enforcement kind of learning. So we, for proprioception, we can use vision, but we can also use touch. So touching specific parts of our body kind of pre-stimulates our sensory cortex. And so it helps to bring more activity to these areas.
Oh, it's so good. I mean, yeah, one of the big takeaways I have gleaned from my neuroscience baby journey, guys, I'm on a baby journey at the moment, in the infancy, is how important sensory stimulation is to actually improve motor output. I found that fascinating.
Absolutely. And I think everyone can try it, you know, just like also it changes your mobility or like flexibility. If you just like touch your leg, like the back, you know, hamstrings is something yogis are really aware of. So if you just touch one leg, like one hamstring, just from your heel, like your calf and hamstring, and the other you won't, and then just do a forward fold before and after, and you'll feel probably a difference. And that's just so
Definitely.
Simple.
It's so simple. And I think the other thing that really kind of was very fascinating for me is when I started looking into the different receptors, sensory receptors, is that we actually have different receptors for every type of sensory stimulation. And this was quite important because I think everyone just wants the magic bullet. You know, we want the one thing that's going to make us feel a bit better when we're about to move. And so, yes, touch is important. But I think what was so mind-blowing was that you have deep tissue receptors and you have light touch and vibration and hot, cold, pinprick. And you've got different cells that do the job of receiving this input to then form your proprioceptive maps, your sensory proprioceptive maps. And I found that really interesting because I don't know about you, but every time I've had like a sore neck, I've gone to a massage therapist and they've gone in the deep tissue straight away. And actually now science is showing that maybe just a light feather brush might be the receptors that we need to stimulate to produce the same alleviation.
Absolutely. It's super interesting. And like we have so many different receptors and it's not like there's so many still to detect. Like science is something, it's always evolving and it's not like we're talking about these things now and we're pretty sure that they are the way they are, but we like there's so much that we don't know yet.
Oh, I love that though.
Yeah, that's what makes it interesting and fascinating, right?
Honestly, it just lights me up so much. And particularly since I've been learning about the brain, this enthusiasm for the human body has been ignited in ways I never dreamed possible. And actually that brings me onto your book because I'm so grateful that you've written it, but I'm gutted it's in German.
Yeah.
I was considering just learning German so I could read your book. But for all of the listeners out there who maybe aren't investing time into learning German, can you give us some takeaways that you think you wish more people knew these one or two things or three things to help us on our journeys.
Yeah, sure, I'd love to. And I'm really regretting it's only in German so far. But yeah, it's all about neuroscience and yoga. So basically, I explain the basic functioning of the nervous system and how it relates to our sensory perception, to what we just talked about, exteroception and interoception, how our motor system works, how we learn. So there's all the basic part, and then what embodiment means. So how tightly coupled our mind is with our body, or brain with our body. And what changes we see in the brain through yoga asana practice, breath work, and meditation. And like the key takeaways really, I think, are first of all, how much our body is coupled with our way of thinking and experiencing the world. That's a concept of embodiment, which is really, really, like, I feel so important. And I feel like this is so relevant for teaching yoga, practicing yoga, and also for our everyday life, because it's so empowering if we understand how we can help ourselves and how everything is related. And then another important message is the need for us to keep challenging us in our yoga practice and in our everyday life, because if we want to keep our brain healthy and active, we need to stimulate it. So I'm always I'm always promoting trying new things and just changing little things up and staying curious and playful.
Hey, my loves, real quick, if you are hypermobile, be sure to check out my book, Too Flexible to Feel Good, where my co-author and I share the latest science on how to help a bendy body feel awesome. If you already have the book, please do leave it an Amazon review. It helps more than you could ever know, and it just might help someone else feel a bit more stable in their bodies. The book is called Too Flexible to Feel Good, and you can get it from most online retailers. I know you've got another one, but I just wanted to interject briefly and say it's funny that the best interviews that I've had have always been scientists who have said that exact message.
Oh, thank you. You need to keep
doing a little bit more challenge, and you need to keep it interesting, and you need to keep making it a little bit harder than it was yesterday. Honestly, every time, and it's funny because it's not like the same type of scientists. Like, I had the same message from a girl who studies bone density a couple of days ago. And then I had, a neuroscientist, and it's just amazing. Everyone's always saying the same thing. People who truly understand the body, I say truly, with what we've got currently, it is always that underlying message. But please, Svenja, sorry for interrupting you. You can add on to that or go on to your other points that you wanted to mention.
Yeah, totally. And I would, just one thing I had in mind when you just said that, and I kind of forgot it. Sorry. Oh, I just had a line and I forgot again. It'll come.
Yeah, while you're talking, you'll be like, I've got it.
Yeah, exactly. So, okay, I'm just going on. I had a third thing that I wanted to mention just as a key takeaway, and I think it's so important, is that we can conclude from all of this that by understanding that we always, by understanding how our brain and body are interconnected, and how much we can do ourselves to, help us to, check our posture, our breath, our mind, our mindset, and then kind of reacting to it with intention. We understand that we have a choice, and we're not the victim of life happening to us, but that by feeling and moving our body, it reminds us that we have the possibility to act and live our life in a way that we feel inspired. And I think that's just such a powerful thing. If you really understand this, it just gives us so much more meaning in life and possibilities. And yeah, I just love this.
Very, very inspiring.
I just remembered again what I wanted to get back to you.
Go for it.
Exactly. So as we said, it's so important to keep challenging us and learn. And I totally agree with that. It's also, I wouldn't want to miss saying that it always depends on how we feel, and if it's totally okay to like a relaxing practice if we need it. You know, it's always dependent on how we feel.
That's a challenge for some people, isn't it? Learning how to relax. That's like an Olympic sport for me.
For me too, actually, yeah. And so I think it's important too, and there's all, it always needs a balance. And I'm so happy yoga practice can really like give us all of that. And and then we can adapt it individually how we need it in that moment.
That was so beautifully said, and I'm so happy you mentioned that. Thank you for bringing that into the conversation. Is there anything that you haven't spoken about yet that you wish you had the opportunity to use this that you wish you had this opportunity just to share a couple more things about the brain, about how maybe we're misunderstanding certain things? Is there anything additional you wanted to add before we close off for the interview?
Well, just one interesting experiment and study, I think, is and something that like everyone who wants to dive deeper into this or just wants to watch an interesting YouTube video, you can look up the rubber hand illusion, which is, I think, a very cool experiment. It like fascinated me right away, and I love to think back to it. So it's about how actually, so what do you think you would perceive a rubber hand as your own hand? Just imagine someone plays the rubber hand just next to your original hand.
Touches it, right?
Yeah, and then it's something when we just think about it, it feels like no way I would like think that this rubber hand belongs to me. But it was shown in an experiment that it's pretty easy to make that kind of illusion. So the person's own hand is hidden from view, and typically under a table or behind some kind of fabric. And a rubber hand is just put in front of your body next to your other hand. And then both the rubber hand and the actual hand that is hidden, like your actual hand, is synchronously stroked with a brush while the person is watching the rubber hand being brushed, you know. So you get a visual and a tactile input, and this kind of matches together weirdly. And so then this causes the person to perceive the rubber hand as his or her own hand. It's so simple. And it can actually, you can try it out at home if you have a rubber hand.
Or, lying around.
Yes. I mean, who doesn't? the interesting thing is when the researchers strike the rubber hand with a hammer, the participants really kind of were shocked and had like an expression of fear of pain, even though the actual body part was unharmed. So it just demonstrates how rapidly adaptable our body image is, and that it is greatly affected by visual representations and proprioception. And it's just also when we use tools in our life, like a knife or, you know, whatever, we use lots of tools as humans, but also blocks in your yoga practice, it will be integrated in our body image. So it is rapidly changing, and you can just try it out and practicing a yoga flow with a yoga block, having the block in your hand for 60 minutes, and then do the same thing for 15 minutes right after. And it will feel very weird not having the block in your hand.
Yeah.
I created a class once with this, and it's so funny. I think it's just so fascinating how we feel our own body and how rapidly it can adapt.
And listen, I did learn about that experiment, and I was absolutely blown away by it, because literally they're synchronizing the stroke on the rubber hand or the stroke on your hand, and you start to think, this is my hand, even though consciously you know it's not. And when they strike it with that hammer, everybody screams in pain. Everyone's like, ow! And I just find it fascinating, but also how powerful vision is. Like in terms of a sense, it is our dominant sense, and it's literally, it's forming so much of the world around us. And I'm so loving how you brought that back to the yoga practice and how we can integrate that with tools around us. I mean, that's fascinating. I always think of the example that popped into my head is stepping off of a trampoline, you know, and you still feel a little bit like you're bouncing around. I know it's very different, but yeah, how our bodies adapt so quickly is just incredible. One question I ask all the guests is, if you had one message for the whole world to help make the world a bit of a better place. It doesn't have to be related to anything we spoke about, or it could be completely tied to it. What would your message for the world be?
You know, that's a very difficult question, making a lot of pressure. But I'd say, like, the very most important thing I'd say is to give yourself time to look, like, and pay attention to yourself, like, to your body, to how you are, to how you feel, and just take those breaks. Because what I see is, and experience myself, we, like, run around all day, and it's so important to take these kind of very short breaks and fully pay attention to yourself. Because in the end, like, when we pay attention to ourselves and take care about ourselves, we are better people for the world. And that's just, that's why I think it's so important.
Okay, that's a beautiful message for the world, Svenja. Thank you. Where can people find out more about you?
You can, like, find my homepage. You find all the information there. And also, I think, the link to my book. And you find me on Instagram, on Svenja Borchers, just like that. And I have a second Instagram page, Yoga and the Brain, just about that connection. Yeah, and I think that's the main thing, at least also for international people.
Listen, thank you so much for, first of all, having the vision of bringing the connection between yoga and the brain. I think it's so powerful. I'm so excited for you and all that you have to share with the world, because it's A, very needed, and B, you've got such a beautiful way of explaining things, and particularly watching your own personal practice, the way you're always pushing yourself is really inspiring. So thank you for the work you do, Svenja. It's been so wonderful having you on Love at First Science.
Thank you so much.
Thanks for listening, everyone. That was part two. Next week, we'll be welcoming a new guest. Remember, if this episode was helpful at all, please do share, rate, and review.